Channel City Video. This is Russ.
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
Hello and welcome to the Emerald City Video Podcast. Today we are going on what is my second and these guys' first trip to a galaxy far, far away to talk about Star Wars The Last Jedi. And I guess I'll kind of kick us off because Zach and I did our new release wall, which is essentially what we call reaction videos, where we literally park by the movie theater and sit in a car and talk about the movie. But my general feeling on this movie is that I think it's an incredibly well-made movie, but I did not enjoy it in the way that I've enjoyed previous Star Wars movies. You know, the way I described it in the other podcast is it kind of lacked that sense of fun and wonder, which makes me sound like those people who bitch about the DC movies, but it is what it is. But yeah, it's a really well-made movie, but I didn't enjoy it. And then the more that I think about it, as time goes on, the more little things that I don't like as much as maybe I thought I did when I came out of the theater. So I'm interested to hear you guys kind of take, because one of the other things, of course, is that there's this extra baggage of this like fan movement of people being just miserable. And I tend to instinctively and kind of reflexively steer away from being part of those movements because most of those people are awful.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's almost like I don't like this movie as much as I want to because I don't want to be one of the people bitching about this movie.
You kind of start to sympathize for the film when these are the opponents.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
the people who are petitioning to close down Rotten Tomatoes because critics gave it good reviews.
Well, and wasn't there also and I don't know if this has been substantiated or if it's just a rumor, but somebody had floated the theory that, oh, the reason Star Wars had got such a bad audience score is because somebody manipulated it. It wasn't necessarily that bad, but...
There was one of those MRA dudes who essentially claimed that he had found a way around, like had created a bunch of fake Facebook accounts in order to beat the identity verification on Rotten Tomatoes. But it was like 2 days prior to him making that claim, Rotten Tomatoes had done an investigation and determined that they didn't believe that had happened. It's plausible, but it's not likely.
The whole Rotten Tomatoes issue is a whole nother podcast that we could get into that is notwithstanding. But
you should listen to Tomato Tomato, which is a podcast by my comicbook.com coworker Jenna Anderson and her boyfriend, in which they literally look at a movie and then look at three Rotten Tomatoes reviews and try to make sense of the narrative around movies.
Well, I mean, when we've talked about it on this podcast at length about aggregate sites and how the internet has changed audiences' perceptions of movies, and that one of the reasons we do this podcast.
Yeah.
You know, people will never have that, oh, you walk into a movie store and ask a clerk for a recommendation and what that means. So,
yeah.
You know, but yeah. I was going to say, Dan, do you want to go first?
We kind of have, this wasn't planned at all, but I think between the three of us, we each kind of have, with Russ, how am I trying to say this? I'm definitely on the other side of, like, I really liked it. I guess to kind of preface that, though, I think in a lot of ways that the rest of the Star Wars pantheon is really just side supporting material for Rogue One. So cue, like, booing and hissing from the listeners on that one, but I really, really loved Rogue One, and
I felt at the time, like, I walked out of the theater, and everybody, including Zach, disagreed with me, but I walked out of the theater essentially saying that I thought this movie tonally felt more like a sequel to Rogue One than that happened to have Skywalkers in it than the kind of obvious next step after Last Jedi.
I agree with that completely, actually.
Yeah, well, looking at, like, the order of operations here, like, there's definitely some kind of, like, I don't know, crossover or, like, they obviously had, I think, Rogue One in mind when they made this. I just love, I understand why people don't like it, or at least my idea or why I sympathize with them is that it's not that, like, the good, good, good guy versus the bad, bad, bad guy in a battle for, you know, the premise of a, you know, galaxy far, far, far away. And I don't say that to, like, belittle those movies. Like, movies where you have really compelling and cool absolutes like that are good. Like, I do enjoy the other Star Wars movies as well. But to see a movie where, like explaining that, like, a huge kickoff for the plot is, like, Luke having, like, moral doubts and, like, a failing of judgment and, like, that's so, like, dark, and I love it. I love that, like, you know, it's 2017 and Star Wars is dipping its toe further and further into this, like, more serious, murkier narrative. I think I mentioned to Logan at work that, like, this would be the Star Wars movie that, like, if I took my kids to, if I had them, if I took my imaginary kids to this movie, I would have to have a conversation about it with them in, like, the car ride home. Like, there's some stuff going on in this movie and a lot of, like, themes of self-sacrifice and just, like, gloom and doom over it that, like, that I liked about Rogue One as well. That, like, you know, there's no dancing Jar Jar Binks in this one to, like, you know, keep the kids happy. Well, there's also, like, a bunch of laser gunfights. Like, this one got real. And I love that about it.
No, it absolutely did. I think the best way I can sum this up for myself, because I think I have the most moderate opinion of it. I enjoyed it not as much as I was hoping to because of all the things you guys have said. First and foremost, I think I'm a fanboy when it comes to Star Wars, and I'm not for most things. So the radical shift in what they did to this movie bothered me, and I hate saying that. I really hate saying that, because Russ, I agree with you. I hate being in that camp. I just hate being in that camp of, like, well, I didn't like it because it's not the way I wanted it to be. But I recognize it's such a good movie. I really think most of the complaints fans have of it are just wrong. I mean, I can almost explain, well, yeah, this makes sense because of this. This makes sense because of this. This is what they were trying to do here. And most people just don't want to admit it to themselves. And I think, to me, I wasn't ready for Star Wars to grow up. And I think that's what it is. It's growing up with their audience. I mean, most of the people, I would say, are our age who grew up with those films. And now they're at that, like, storytelling level. So it's like, well, whether we know it or not, we kind of crave that storytelling on that level. We may not have wanted it with Star Wars, but in general, most of the things that I like now are not family movies or, like Dan said, the good, good guy versus the bad, bad guy. I want conflict between my, you know, with my good guys, bad guys not being so one-dimensional.
I wonder how much of this might have been a reflection of things like the popularity in 8 seasons of Game of Thrones. Like,
yes.
Was Disney and the writers, like, what other properties might they have looked at to think, like, okay, we got to update this for, you know.
Because
I
agree audiences.
I don't know where, like, the largest population, like, who really are. Where are the most people who, quote, grew up with this, since it's a series that's been around for so long?
Mm-hmm.
But it does feel in a way like, yeah, they are sort of aging this one up. I mean, you did have a couple, like the little penguin guys. And
yeah.
Like, there's still, like, a little bits of that, you know, Luke throwing the saber over his shoulder. Like, there was still some of that, like, hey, let's be funny. Let's still be, like, PG-13 in here. But, I think you could easily recut that movie, and aside from the swears, like, you'd have a pretty convincing, like, not an argument for it to be R-rated, but you might scratch your head and wonder, like, what, you know, what am I missing that, like, could make this just a little closer to that rating? I don't know. It seems like it's, it was definitely, like, kind of, like, it wanted to go in that direction at times, maybe.
Yeah. I think, to be honest with you, a lot of, and I think, I can't remember exactly what Rian Johnson said, but I've had kind of the same opinion since I saw the film, and something that I read from him kind of validated it, which is, I think that they believe that for the long term, Star Wars has to evolve. And yes. That, it, you know, as much as the first time or two that things are different, there's going to be a lot of angry, like, long-time audience members. I think that realistically, if you're going to be making a Star Wars movie literally every year for the foreseeable future, that you need Star Wars to feel more like a contemporary film franchise that people would see if not for the brand.
Actually, I completely agree with that. And what really resonates with that for me is, if I didn't care about Luke Skywalker as a character as much as I do, I would have thoroughly loved this movie. And I know that because Han Solo, whom I like as a character, like, I enjoyed seeing him on screen, but I never had that connection to him. So when he died in The Force Awakening, I was like, I don't care. Like, yeah, it sucks that he died, but I don't care. Like, at least they did it in a good way. It made sense for the character. And that's my disconnect with this, is everything that Luke, that happened to Luke in this, and everything they did with him, makes sense. That's why I think it's a well-put-together movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, oh, why? It, like, I really just like that character.
Just Star Wars, how you do me like that?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, and that's why it's tough, because I do think they grew it up, and I think if I saw it again, maybe even a third time, I'd have a different opinion. But when I went to go see this movie, and part of it is that two-year wait time, I had, yeah, everybody had expectations for this. Yeah. They were completely wrong.
And I mean, there's, I'll say too that there are bits and bobs of this where I really liked the subversion of expectations, and then there are bits of it where I felt like expectations just weren't being paid off.
I think that's the name of this movie. Expectations just weren't paid off, period, in general.
I'd be curious to really hear what you guys, like, what, because again, like, I'm kind of the more casual Star Wars fan, yeah. So when, like, I heard rumors of, like, and everybody speculated, well, what's Rey's parents going to be? Who could they be? Could it be Obi-Wan? Who's kid? And they just say right out in the movie that, like, nobody important.
Yep.
Like, I love that, but I'm wondering, it's like, is that a point of pain for you guys? Like, what were these...
No,
what were the expectations?
Actually, that one I really liked, because kind of the democratization of the Force is something that I think has to happen in order for the franchise to thrive long term.
Yes, mm-hmm. I agree.
I think that making it like the Messiah family is not a
sustainable.
Especially, you know, one of the things Logan and I talked about when we went out, we were like running errands the other day, was that I genuinely think if Rey throws the Empire into chaos again, you lose implicitly what made Luke and Anakin really super compelling, which is that they essentially flew under the radar. They were these kind of nobodies who weren't on it. Like, nobody was watching for them. Nobody was trying to murder them until they made their big splashy debut. If Rey were another Skywalker, then it's like, you know what? You can't do this for another generation, because everybody's going to be watching her like a hawk, and the minute she's pregnant, they're going to try to kill the baby. Like, if only one family, then at some point, you can never ever have the story of somebody who comes from nothing and becomes something again. Because A, they implicitly do not come from nothing being Skywalkers. And B, everybody in the galaxy is going to be watching them for what happens next. And so I thought that was really clever. I know that it did disappoint, like, a few people, but I liked that. That falls to me into, like, the subversion of expectations. The areas where I felt like some things just didn't kind of pay off. We're like, excuse me, like Captain Phasma, where it's like, why bother to bring back a character so that you can like have her do basically the exact same thing she did last movie. She fights with this one guy for 5 minutes and then you kill her off.
She may not be dead. Like, be dead.
Yeah, probably. I hope she's
that
dead.
Would make sense.
I agree. Like,
they bring her back again just to, what, kick her off another bigger cliff?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And also, to be honest with you, like, she is a regular person. It's not like she's Vader. It's not like she's Rey. I kind of feel like if you bring back regular people from the dead in this universe, it breaks some of the internal logic of Star Wars to me.
I bet you're going to find out that she's a clone.
That's very possible. Actually, I hadn't thought about that.
It's the only explanation.
But yeah, I mean, I guess if they do that and they do it well, then maybe. But I did kind of feel like, I felt like A, it was squandered potential, and B, anything they do now to try and quote unquote fix that squandered potential is just going to feel tacked on.
Probably.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on the fans, but that was... Now that you mention it, like, yeah, what a waste.
And the Snoke thing to an extent, too. Like, I definitely get what they were going for, and... this one was difficult for me because somebody spoiled it for me.
See, that one doesn't bother me because the Emperor in the original movies was treated the exact same way. Like, you saw him only in one movie.
Oh, I know. And he literally died the same way.
Yeah, the same way. Like
he was like literally like torturing the good guy and talking shit about how his Padawan was his bitch. And then said Padawan got grumpy about being the bitch and took over.
Yeah. Snoke got a hell of a lot more exposition than the Emperor ever did.
Yeah, I don't mind that he didn't have backstory. I just kind of felt like the way that they, like, I don't know. There's something about the way that they did it that felt kind of like, oh, okay, what was that guy here for?
And I don't know, maybe that was the placation to the fans because it's the whole, like, oh, there can only be two, what is it? Oh, dark side users. I forget the term.
Yeah, it's a master and an apprentice.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought they implied that he has other apprentices. So, and I mean, the rule of two thing is one of those weird things that Star Wars fans read a lot more into than I think necessarily is in the script. And so we'll see how it plays out. But
yeah, that's true. I don't know. Dan, to answer your question, and this is one of those things where I have to say with the extended universe books, the expectations for these characters were just so ingrained in me that anything other than that or something like that was just going to be disappointing to me. I think just the portrayal of Luke not as a actual Jedi Master was just painful, especially the "I'm going to run away like a crybaby" was just honestly like cringeworthy. Even though they had a really good explanation for it, and they really did, like it worked out well. I honestly can't fault their story wise for it. Like it works great for their narrative, just because of how I feel about the character and the extended universe. It actually pained me. I was like, why did you have to do that? And they did.
I get that on a level though, because to me, I look at what they did with Luke in this movie, and I kind of go, you know, there are two or three really minor tweaks that I could make to the script to make him feel more kind of satisfying to me as a viewer. And that being the case, I almost feel like it's not like that didn't occur to the people involved with doing this story. Like, in all likelihood, they specifically set out to kind of subvert those expectations and to, you know, for lack of a better word, to disappoint people to make them kind of confront elements of the character or of the story.
I think they did. Like, I read an article that explicitly kind of says, like, yeah, we kind of played with people's expectations.
Yeah, let's, now that you guys point that out, like, I definitely, I can identify with that a lot more. I guess, again, like, I just didn't, every time a big movie like this comes out, I'm just kind of, like, wipe away any expectations of stuff and try to my best to just go into things kind of blindly. So for me, I think the only thing I was, like, specifically looking forward to in the whole movie was Snoke's guard. Because I remember seeing, like, some of the character design and thinking, like, oh, those guys are really cool.
Oh, and, man, then you did not get disappointed.
Well, they were there, but I would have liked to see them for a little bit more, I guess. Now knowing that was, like, that was it. They made these cool, like, plastic samurai space guys that just to get, like, wrecked, and now they're gone.
Yeah, I mean, probably. We'll see, because obviously now that Kylo has declared himself as the, it's not Emperor, what is it?
Snoke?
Grandmaster, is that what it is? I don't know. Anyway, now that, because Kylo declared himself, like, he just took over, Supreme Leader, the Supreme Leader role. And so, you know, it's distinctly possible, it'll be interesting to see how much time passes between this movie and the next one and what the kind of changes look like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, first of all, because I'm kind of hoping that it jumps forward a ways and that we see how Rey and Kylo have evolved. Like, one of the things about this movie is that because it picked up almost immediately after The Force Awakens, they were basically the same characters in a different story. Like, those two characters were. I would like to see a little time pass because, A, it would be interesting to see how they evolve now that they are in kind of their, like, ideal form almost. And also, frankly, I think it might help them to sidestep the very fraught issue of dealing with Leia.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens with that. Yeah, like a flashback scene or something.
Whatever they do. I mean, if you jump forward 5 years, then you could just say that something happened to her off screen, or you could put her somewhere else and just say, like, oh yeah, she's still alive, she's still leading the rebellion, she's just not hanging out with our group of 11 people. Whereas if you do what they did this time and you pick up where literally, like, that base that gets destroyed at the beginning of this movie is the base that they were at the end of the last movie. Mm-hmm. And so if you do something like that again and you make this entire trilogy take place over the span of a few weeks, then you would lose the ability to kind of maneuver on the Leia front. Because obviously we know where she is at the end of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm very interested in, like, I actually am legit interested in the new characters. And so that element of the movie is one of the things that worked the best for me. I want to see, now that they've reached kind of their potential, and you've got Kylo as, you know, the Supreme Leader and Rey as the last / main Jedi, I kind of want to see where they evolve to. No evolution if the next movie takes place, you know, a day or 3 months after this one, and they have another fight and one of them dies.
It would be more wasted potential, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, And I know, Dan, you have mentioned this before. I think the biggest misstep in this whole new trilogy is we have gotten a very big blind or lack of backstory leading up to how this happened to the state of the galaxy. Because last we knew, especially since Disney has retconned all the extended universe, the good guys won.
Yeah.
And all of this has happened in extended media comics by Disney or by Marvel,
yeah,
and video games, which is fine, but not having it connect or even like a 5-minute, hey, this is how we got here in one of the main movies, yeah, I think is a serious misstep.
I know, if only this franchise had some delivery device for backstory, like a giant yellow text crawl that starts at the beginning of every goddamn film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like they've made a pocket for like an episode 6.5. Like we're waiting for like, I hate to say it this way, but like Rogue Two, yeah. The movie where they screw everything up.
That, you know, that's actually a fair observation. It wouldn't surprise me if that's kind of what we're seeing next. Mm-hmm. And that would give them an opportunity to address a lot of things in terms of like, oh, you're disappointed you didn't get enough Phasma? Well, she's like the badass who's, you know, the head of the bad guys as she rises to power in this middle trilogy, blah, 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 blah. Which again, like, whenever I speculate about stuff, especially in a movie that I'm not 100% like, yes, I loved it, it's the best. I always feel like speculation sounds like I'm trying to write the next thing, which is always, you know, because that's when you get into trouble, is when you think that you know or you want a specific story, because you then go in and all those expectations, like, it's never going to happen. It's never going to happen that you write the exact story that the people who are paid to do it come up with. And so I always have to be clear, like, this is just fun speculation. This is not me going, man, I hope that's what they do next. That'll just fix all my concerns.
Well, I think that's what happened with Last Jedi. Too many people did that. They're like, oh, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that's a thing. Certainly, you know, there's this element of no matter what you do, you're not going to be able to get out from under A New Hope and Empire. Like, those two movies came at exactly the right moment, and they were exactly what kind of society needed. And so I just, to me, it's not only are they good films, but they were perfect films for the moment when they were being made. And trying to recapture that is functionally impossible.
I read an article about that, actually, and how these movies have been about kind of the perfect movies for their time. This movie in particular has been all about, this is not the status quo movie. This is bucking the trend. It's not about the safe movie for all you know, white rich males. This is about minorities. It's about, you know, bucking the trend here. Oh, you love your Star Wars tropes? Nope, we're not doing that. Every Star Wars trope that you think is going to happen is not going to happen. I don't know if I believe it or not, but...
I mean, certainly there's probably an element of that in there. I know that a lot of the people who I'm talking to for my day job now are approaching kind of our current culture and going, I feel urgently the need to comment on stuff, but I do not feel the need to urgently comment on Trump because it feels like it's just too easy. And so I suspect we'll see a lot of either coded or not so coded kind of fiction in the next few years dealing with kind of that, like those themes.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It's, I can also imagine that some of it was just a backlash against backlash, because it was like the last movie, everybody bitched about how there wasn't a sympathetic white male protagonist. And then the movie made $1.5 billion anyway. And so clearly those people who were bitching don't actually wield that much power. And so...
Hooray!
And that's kind of... I feel like probably consciously or unconsciously that leads you to double down in the sequels. I do think there's probably, again, intentionally or unintentionally, some commentary on like the status quo of this universe being an old white guy who essentially is impotent and frozen by his own fear of failure.
Let me elbow my way in here with a quip. I don't know what these people are complaining about. Chewbacca is the perfect representation. He is a full body neck beard. There you are. There's your representative. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, really.
But yeah, I mean, I think, again, I agree with you. I think that either consciously or unconsciously, that element is definitely here. It would be interesting to kind of talk to them and see if that was something they set out to do. But, you know, there's a lot of things with these kinds of movies, the $200 million blockbusters, where I feel like the real answer to a question like that will come out in 5 or 6 years when all the people who did this movie are divorced from the day-to-day operation of the franchise and they can talk more freely. It's very much like all of the like crazy rumors and shit you've heard about Justice League. And it's like, when are we going to get like what approaches a real story as to how that movie became the kind of weird thing that it became? It'll be years, and it'll be like somebody will finally just break an NDA and tell the whole story, and then other people will spend the next 2 years responding to it and rewriting the history so that they can have their say, you know?
I don't know. I enjoyed Justice League.
No, I enjoyed Justice League too, but it's very clear that there was a lot of crazy shit going on behind the scenes. You know, I thought Justice League was a great example of... Okay, so after Star Wars, I actually tweeted something along the lines of, you know, here's a friendly reminder. It's okay for movies to be great but not good, and also to be good but not great. And I think that the Snyder movies had striven to be great. And when you take big risks, you can have big failures. And that the people who did not enjoy those films, by and large, saw them as big failures, but maybe didn't recognize that the reason that that was happening was because they were taking big risks. With Justice League, I feel it's the opposite. I feel like the movie took minimal risk. And as a result, it didn't strive to be great. It strove to be good, which is what it came out to be. I think it was a good movie. But it, you know, to me, I felt like it didn't roll the dice in the way that Snyder's movies had done, largely because at that point, the studio had been penalized by 3 out of 4 movies that rolled the dice and then people pilloried them.
Yeah.
And so
well,
that's really more what I was kind of getting at with the Justice League parallel is like, there are times when the quote unquote real story of stuff isn't going to come out until way down the line when people feel like their jobs aren't in danger by commenting on like the really interesting stuff that happened behind the scenes.
See, the funny thing is I mean, I know my feelings are personal about The Last Jedi, but I will tell people this. It was a great movie. It was a great movie. It's not for me, but it's a great movie. And it may be because I have that video store clerk background, but I would tell people that. Be like, look, if you're not married to the source material or you're not a fanboy, go see it. You'll love it. If you
and
are,
that's why I tweeted that about like after this movie. I didn't tweet it about this movie per se. But I think this is like, whereas I think Justice League is a good movie that's not great, I think that this is a great movie that for me is not good, if that makes sense.
No, and I agree with that. Like, now that may change if I see it a couple more times.
Yeah, and certainly great movies have the ability to kind of stick with you and resonate with you in a way that makes them a lot more good over time, whereas good movies very, very infrequently become great with follow-up viewings. Like, I don't think anybody is going to decide that because they've seen it 21 times, Armageddon is the best movie ever made.
I don't know. Dan?
So what was the best movie ever made?
Armageddon.
I'm just, like, shocked trying to process that for a minute. the list of Bruce Willis movies that aren't Christmas-related.
Wait. No, that's not.
Cop Out?
No. Or am I thinking of... No, that's Armageddon.
Yeah,
he's that's Armageddon. Like, Liz Tyler is his daughter and all, and blah, blah, blah. It's easy to confuse that with Deep Impact, but we'll get off on a tangent.
Yes, it is.
The other movie about drilling into the big rock that came out suspiciously around the same time, if I remember right. But anyway.
Yeah, two movies that came out within a month of each other, so...
About asteroids. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, I'm sorry. I completely just blanked thinking about Die Hard.
I remember when we were at the store, I remember that movie The Core came out.
Oh, God. Yep.
Yeah, with the woman
from Don't
Cry.
Hilary Swank.
Yeah, yeah. And I just remember thinking that The Core was like, if they, for some reason, made a sequel to Deep Impact. Like, it was this big... expensive disaster movie that spent very little time dealing with a disaster and was all about the emotional toll it took on people, which on paper sounds like a really cool, really creative way to take a disaster movie. But
it just doesn't work.
In practice, it just wasn't, it didn't do either. Like, it didn't have fun and it didn't deepen the experience. And so anytime somebody brings up Deep Impact, I immediately think of The Core, because I was like, they both had the exact same approach and they both had the exact same problem. And that's why basically we only remember them as like the poor man's versions of other things.
Yeah. I watched The Core a lot in the store because it was just something I could put on and be like, I can forget about this.
Yep.
It has action
related new release, or PG rated new release. It was something that like, nobody was coming to the store for it, but if they saw it on the screen, they might be like, oh, this scene looks cool. Yeah. But yeah, let me think if there's anything else Star Wars-wise that...
The only other thing that surprised me about Star Wars, and not it's not even about The Last Jedi, Rogue One. I didn't realize how many
people
were not a huge fan of Rogue One.
Oh yeah. I love that movie so much. I don't like almost nothing but opposition from people. A lot of people rank it in like their three worst Star Wars movies for some reason.
It's a weird thing. I think with the more recent films, like when Rogue One came out, I remember all the buzz being super positive, and then there was like a backlash about 2 months after it was in theaters. And that backlash has more or less been sustained ever since, where it never quite got back to the, hey, everybody loves it, that it was when it was in theaters. I kind of compare it to Man of Steel in that way. Like, Man of Steel was a movie that, like, there were some naysayers when it came out, but, like, Rotten Tomatoes score was good, audience score was good, like, the buzz was generally pretty positive. And then, like, the backlash started coming in over a variety of elements of that movie, whether it's like the nerds getting upset they killed somebody, or whether it's like deeper structural issues that have a little more validity.
I'm telling you, man, it's the space filters.
Yeah, right. I don't think they have any of those on the Krypton TV show. I think we're safe.
Good.
But yeah, I feel like Man of Steel and Rogue One got essentially the same treatment, where the buzz was so much more positive when it came out then it ended up being like a couple of months later or once it came to video, that I think if you aren't paying super close attention, you probably thought, oh yeah, people like that movie. Look, it made a bunch of money and I remember hearing good things. And then like way later you'll be like, oh wait, everybody hates that? How did that happen?
Yeah, that's the exact thought I had.
I mean, Logan, you remember, I was like screaming about it for hours after I saw it.
Oh yeah.
I love that.
I'm just kind of
I don't know what to say. To say that I'm a casual Star Wars fan is kind of not correct. I've played all the games and the RPGs and read a bunch of extended universe fiction and stuff. I guess it's just that my like attachment to like I don't have a vision for what. the right Star Wars should be, or my version of a Star Wars story. I just kind of enjoy soaking it up. I'm just in that Star Wars puddle. Like, whatever you got, man, it's cool. I probably like it.
Yeah. Which is, it's funny, because I think that used to be the default setting with a lot of, like, big blockbusters, where it was just, like, most people went in like not thinking super deeply and just generally expecting to enjoy it. Whereas now I think there's a huge, huge subset of the population who go into this kind of movie just knowing they're going to hate it.
And well, I think that's the problem you get when everything's a sequel.
Yeah. I mean, and part of it is everything being a franchise. I can't remember who it was. Oh, it was when she was doing press for Iron Man 3. Gwyneth Paltrow had been talking about how she, you know, somebody asked her, like, you know, what of your movies do you think is, like, really underrated or something, like some generic kind of junket question like that. And she said Shallow Hal. And she said, movies like that don't exist anymore. Like mid-budget movies that are expensive to make but aren't blockbusters. She's like, basically we're at a stage now in Hollywood where everybody wants to either make a $10 million or less movie so that they can, like, Clerks it up and turn a giant profit on a micro investment. Or the other side of that is they want to spend $75 million and up and try to make a billion-dollar movie. And I think she's oversimplifying there, but I think, on the other hand, that there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah.
And I think that the culture of both Hollywood and fandom is such that those $75 million and up movies are incredibly, incredibly bogged down by fan expectations, corporate expectations. It's very difficult to make one that's just good and entertains people and makes some money and there's no backlash from anybody. Whereas I genuinely feel like when we were at the video store, you could make like a $150 million movie, and as long as it made, you know, $400 or $500 million back, then you were in super good shape.
Yeah, no, the times have changed.
But, and I mean, there's a lot of things behind that too. I think that when you look at something like Star Wars or Justice League, there's probably an extra $100 million being spent on like promotion and marketing that maybe wasn't part of the equation back then. But that's a whole other conversation.
One thing that's cool, but that, yeah, I will say, that one is,
oh, sorry?
Sorry. I was just going to say that, like, speaking of sequels, though, that, like, speaking, it was cool, like, it was
Star Wars, like, it validated a lot of, didn't like about Force Awakens, about, like, my social complaint that they, like,
these characters too fast, like,
actually ended up working out, and so after having
seen Last Jedi, like,
my impression of Force Awakens has, like, improved a lot, and I would, like, want to watch it again,
We should do that, actually, for I think it's not the next episode after this, but two more. We're going to hit number 50. And I was thinking that what we should do for 50, I've had like three or four different ideas of like fun things that might be that we might do. But one of the things I was kicking around was like do a rewatch and some kind of additional commentary on The Force Awakens and Josie and the Pussycats, because that was our first episode. So maybe, that's worth exploring at some point.
A retrospective.
First time in a long, first time in a while, by the way, that I have not had my Josie and the Pussycats poster hanging in my office.
Oh, because it's your company coming over, right?
No, no, it wasn't that. It was because I shot a little video thing for Doomsday Clock. When I went to the like Geoff Johns spotlight panel at New York Comic Con, they gave us these like 18 by 24 posters of the first three like variant covers to Doomsday Clock in the style of those old Watchmen ads from the 80s, where it's like black and white and it has the quote on the top. And so I hung all those in my office, and then I replaced my Josie and the Pussycats poster with a Watchmen movie poster, so that it's all tied together thematically.
Nice.
But but I do have my pair of Josie and the Pussycats ears hanging on the wall, along with an autographed du jour CD.
Yeah, Logan, how dare you imply that he would take down his Josie and the Pussycats poster in shame as company was coming over. How do you doubt Russ?
You're right. I am not worthy. I should not have doubted you.
Well, I mean, that's true. I spent a lot of time on the internet talking up that movie. So,
it's a fun movie.
Anyway,
company's coming over. Time to go get this enlarged.
Right? There you go. Just make it a whole wall.
Yeah.
One thing that we had not talked about at all that I kind of wanted to touch on was the casino subplot.
Oh, yes.
Like,
oh, yes.
like, it was such an odd, and again, this falls into the category, I think, of trying to subvert familiar Star Wars tropes, because there's always a side mission to get a MacGuffin, and then that's what helps save the day. Whereas in this one, there's like the side mission to get the MacGuffin, and it fails, and those people have to be rescued, and it totally throws off everything.
It does more than fail. And it does more than actually, fail. It actually fucks everything up.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've seen a lot of people who want to say that, like, this is like an examination of like toxic masculinity, or this is a deconstruction of the Han Solo archetype, and the idea that Oscar Isaac's character, the original trilogy, he would have been the guy who was right in that situation instead of the guy who fucked it all up. I think, again, that falls into the category of maybe those are unconscious choices. I don't necessarily think that anybody set out to do that, but hey, maybe I'm wrong.
I think it was a conscious choice. Just not in the way that it was supposed to be a commentary on male toxicity. Just, hey, this is the Star Wars trope of...
This is the Star Wars trope of...
The Han Solo character is right, and he's going to save the day.
Mm-hmm.
Nope,
he doesn't.
Russ, we're getting like a bit of an echo back from you.
Huh. Yeah. Let me see. I was rocking in my chair. Maybe if I stop, it'll fix.
I just hope that doesn't like wind up on the recording or anything.
Yeah, I'm actually hearing a massive echo.
Huh.
Just watching the levels, like it's coming
just
back.
Watching the levels, like it's coming back. Looks like from Russ. Looks like
weird. Maybe I can mute when I'm not talking. Boring. Pardon?
Say what? Say what?
Yeah, and I'm actually hearing it from Dan.
Honestly, it might just be Google Hangouts, because now that we've been going for a while, it's possible that your like cache is starting to fill up with this shit.
Right. Pardon our technical dust.
And ordinarily, I would have tried to do this on Skype, but recently my Skype recorder got an upgrade, and whatever the upgrade was just totally fucked it up.
So. Have you tried Discord? Or I don't even know if Discord could.
I've actually done.
There's a handful of things that I haven't like really done yet that I should try because I've been so busy.
Yeah, This is a side thing.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say was that it was an important step in Poe Dameron's character arc. Like the fact that he wasn't right, that he needs to change his
style of
bravado.
Bravado.
To be a leader.
Because
that's what the resistance needs, and that's what the resistance needs, not
what he was.
Right, and I think that's the thing they're obviously doing is setting him up to be a key figure in the revolution.
Especially now
by
that
the
Harry
end of
Fisher,
his trilogy.
Especially now that Harry Fisher has passed away.
Yeah, although, I mean, I'm pretty sure that her death had basically nothing to do with the way this film was cut together. Because there are elements in here, like that scene where she's essentially, you essentially see her die on screen, and then she like forces herself back to life. I feel like if they were going to adjust anything to accommodate for her death, they would have removed that because it was just kind of off.
But only because the actress passed away.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It wasn't a narrative problem. It was literally like a weird, like meta-text problem of like watching it and going like, "Oh, is this how they're going to get rid of Carrie Fisher?"
Yeah.
I feel bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think that's it's inevitable. Like, because you're intellectually, you know, that that's a problem they're going to have to address, and I. It's one of those things where I'm both glad that they said we're going to leave the movie as is and we'll deal with that problem down the line. And also it makes me super nervous about how they're going to do it because obviously now it means that they have to handle it in a movie where they have no footage of her.
Mm-hmm. And they've even stated they're not going to use CGI.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see. It's really hard to do a good job of writing a character that important out off screen. But I do understand, like, they're very, very limited by the kind of constraints of what is plausible and also what fans will accept. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a difference between subverting fan expectations and storytelling and something like messing with the way that they write out Leia, which would feel like a betrayal, I think, on a visceral level.
Well, and Dan, you and I talked a little bit about how the casino scene had a major misstep, right?
Well, yeah.
I think we both agree that this would have been a great opportunity to just slip a Lando cameo in somewhere.
Yeah, that was an odd choice that they didn't, because I kind of felt like the thing with the Codebreaker even really lends itself to that, because it's like, he doesn't even have a line, they don't have to go bother him, like, all he's doing is enjoying life. And if the reason that you don't have Lando is because Billy Dee Williams is having, you know, hip problems and all this kind of stuff, and he realistically can't do the action, it's like, that would have been a really opportune place to slip the character in, just to be like, hey, yeah, he exists. Good for you guys.
Yeah. Well, I'm almost positive every single person, when they said Codebreaker, thought Lando.
Mm-hmm. It almost makes me wonder if he was removed because Solo is the next movie we're going to see, and they've got some kind of grander Lando plan.
I don't know. I've heard rumors that that movie is not expected to do well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that movie is going to get the Justice League treatment, in terms of the media narrative around the movie is all about the kind of mess behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And the studio definitely has the advantage of being able to be like, oh, it underperformed. I blame the fact that we had to fire the directors. And so certainly I think they want it to do well. And I certainly think that realistically stockholders are expecting a Star Wars movie to make $1 billion. Mm-hmm. But I also think if the movie underperforms, as long as it's not like a catastrophic embarrassment, I think that the Star Wars kind of wider universe will continue to roll along unperturbed by it, because they can kind of blame the stuff that we all know happened, which is all anybody's going to be talking about in the run-up to the movie anyway.
True.
So, yeah, I mean, I do think that realistically, I mean, the Star Wars saga, or no, Star Wars story movies, I kind of feel like I'm curious as to whether we're going to start seeing the story movies play into the saga movies in a way, in terms of, okay, Rogue One, we know where it fits in. This Solo thing, what's the hook? Like, is there going to be some kind of like tie to the old movies that we didn't know about, and or is there going to be a tie to whatever's going on with Lando now that will pay off in Episode 9 or beyond? And so that's really all I was saying about the Lando thing, is that, like, I could totally see them trying to set that up. Although I do kind of like the idea of having these kind of world-building movies that exist outside of the context of the main movies and don't necessarily have to serve as a jumping off point for sequels. I don't know. It feels to me a little bit like the Elseworlds movies that DC was ostensibly working on, and God knows if any of those will come out or not, because there's like 28 movies in development at Warner Brothers right now. But the movies that would be like, oh yeah, we're going to do a Joker story, and it's not going to have anything to do with Jared Leto, and it's not going to have anything to do with any of the movies that exist right now. It's just like, we had a cool Joker story, so let's make a movie. And so I kind of like as much as that's going to confuse casual moviegoers in the same way that things like Rogue One, I think, will confuse casual moviegoers a little bit, I like the idea, both for Star Wars and for like superhero movies, because it allows people an access point where they can watch the characters they enjoy without necessarily having to indulge in like the continuity porn of watching the other 8 Marvel movies that came out in the last 2 years, you know?
Well, from a business standpoint, too, if all these people are going to complain that there isn't, you know, the lead character that reflects them, here's your Han Solo series. If it does well enough.
Yeah, and that's another obvious thing, too, actually. That's a good point, is that with Rogue One, it was like, no matter how well the movie did, it was never going to have a sequel. Why? Because we all know how it ends. Whereas with Han, it's like, we know he's not going to die in that movie because we know when he dies.
True.
And it looked like Alden Ehrenreich at that point. So.
Mm-hmm. I'll see it.
My only thing with the casino subplot is that it felt like in a movie that was already long and already crowded, that there was a lot of kind of filler in the casino subplot that didn't necessarily need to be there. But on the other hand, there was also a fair amount of plot that happened in the casino subplot, and I feel like had they chopped some of the extraneous fluff in order to get down to the meat of that story, it would have felt really abrupt, and it would have not felt like a Star Wars movie, because it, like, you would have sacrificed all of your world building and all of your character stuff for plots, and it would have been like that episode of the Clerks cartoon where they were just like, wow, that last scene went by fast.
Well, Dan and I were talking about this. We thought it was actually a really well-paced movie.
No, and that's, I think it was a well-paced movie, but I think that part of the reason it was paced well is that objectively, if you look at that subplot, it's like there's all this stuff that doesn't really need to be there, but it's there explicitly for pacing.
Yeah, and it worked well.
But I do see why, like, the people who either didn't like the movie or who are, like, just looking for something to complain about, or, you know, people like me who just, even if I like a movie, I'll dissect the shit out of it and go listen to the new release while we did for Spider-Man Homecoming, where I basically did nothing but bag on a movie for an hour and then be like, yeah, 4 stars out of 5. I think that it's easy to see kind of, it's easy to look at that sequence and be like, wow, that was a little bloated and overly complicated. But like, if you put a gun to my head, I couldn't tell you what could be cut without materially damaging the rest of the movie.
Mm-hmm. The casino scene does give us a little glimpse for how the hell did we get here? And just that little bit of commentary that, like, hey, all these rich guys who sell guns to everyone are like the real people who rule the galaxy, blah, blah, blah. And it's that's like the closest thing that if I went at, I can kind of piece together in my head. Okay, well, maybe the rebellion worked and won, but then the military industry that we are now seeing here doing all this, just wouldn't let it happen.
Okay,
I'm being really generous. That explanation's so bad. And this is the closest thing I think that satisfies that for me.
I do think that part of it is after Rogue One. I think that I think that both Rogue One and Last Jedi reflect our evolving understanding of war. In terms of war is not black and white. I think that the evolving understanding of war in the Star Wars universe mirrors our evolving understanding of war in the real world. Like, war is not black and white, and there are very, very few kind of objectively good people on either side. Mm-hmm. And I think that they're kind of playing with that theme a little bit, that, like, even if you're Leia, you don't get to be the admiral of, like, a galactic military force without making some questionable, difficult decisions, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that that's kind of what was playing itself out in the casino thing. I hope that that's a theme that gets explored a little more, because it was definitely present in Rogue One, And it would be a shame to A, see it dropped, and also B, frankly, it would be a shame if the only point of the, like, 20 minutes that we spent on the casino subplot was like, oh, look, there's people who are force sensitive who aren't Skywalkers. Because I kind of feel like, as cool as it was, like the visual of that kid taking his inspiration from the Jedi's and blah, 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 I felt like narratively it wasn't needed because we already had the revelation that you don't have to be a Skywalker with the fact that Rey was nobody.
Oh, but see, mm-hmm. I thought that was a super important revelation because it wasn't about you don't need to be Skywalker. It's that it's spreading the Jedi teachings is wrong, but it's spreading that spark of rebellion. In addition, the Jedi teachings, I guess, or whatever you want to call it.
No, and I do get that. I just felt like, and again, I'm not saying that I would have cut it at all. I'm just saying that if that were the only point of the whole casino bit was to kind of show
the kid.
The kid slash the themes that we're talking about, it's like, okay, those are themes that could have been revealed or explored or exploited in other ways, and giving us a whole subplot just to tack it on at the end would have been weird. So I'm really
I disagree. I think if it had been tacked on some other way, it would have felt hokey and stupid. But that's just
my
opinion.
Again, I'm not even saying that I don't like it. I'm just saying that I hope that the other themes that are present in that sequence continue to be important to the franchise because I don't think that just that theme, as much as I like it, would have justified a whole 20-minute, you know.
Well, there is potential because the Benicio del Toro character, as far as I know, is not on board when that thing happened.
Yeah, he's not explicitly on board anyway. I believe that they said that his reward for helping the Empire was that they were going to give him the ship that they stole in the casino world.
Right. Well, it just implied that he's gone.
Right.
Yeah. Speaking of which.
I mean, it's Star Wars, so there are certain, like, as much as, like, oh, yeah, the Gwendolyn Christie character, I feel like, okay, we basically saw her die. Even if we didn't see her die, we basically did. Oh, so yeah. I kind of feel like there's no, like, it would hurt the narrative in some way if she came back. The Benicio del Toro character, I think the working assumption has to be, of course, we're going to see him again.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, in no way, shape, or form did we see him die. And, like, the idea of him being off screen in that way is basically the same as, like, if Boba Fett were off screen in that way, like, you wouldn't expect him to just be assumed to be dead.
I mean, they Wilhelm Scream chucked Boba Fett down a hole and he came back in the fiction.
There you go, exactly. And they, I mean, the extended universe is always fun. Actually, that's a good question because I don't do the expanded, like, whatever fiction very much. Have in the post Disney era, have they brought Boba Fett back yet?
I don't know.
I mean, it's one of those things. I think I remember seeing him in a Marvel comic, but those Marvel comics, like
he showed up in the Vader miniseries, but that's pre Sarlacc death.
Yeah. I'm not even sure. That's a really, like, that's one of those things that I'm curious about. And certainly, like, that's the other thing. Like, any time when we say, oh, this was underdeveloped or this was whatever, that just leaves opportunity either for future movies or for comics and books and whatever else. To me personally, and this is going to sound funny since I, like, comics are basically my life bread, but I don't – if it's Star Wars and your main delivery device is these feature films – I, as a casual viewer, really don't care what happens in the comics or on the Clone Wars or whatever. Like, if it's not explained in the movies and if it's not present in the movies, then it didn't happen to me.
You would have thought they would have learned this lesson in Episode 2 and 3 when they introduced General Grievous in the Clone Wars miniseries and everybody was like, what the fuck? Who is this guy?
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, and again, like, these are all kind of fairly small things. I really think that the movie was by and large really well put together. There are, and I can't even think of a good example, right? Oh, actually, I'll tell you the one thing. Like, and Logan, you and I talked about this. There are a couple things that kind of where I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. It's not quite as perfect as I thought it was. The Maz Kanata cameo seems kind of out of nowhere to me. It's like they're just using this like video game cut footage of like a weird hologram of her, and she like her entire role is to point them to the code breaker, which I feel like literally anybody could have done. And also, since she was friends with Han, who the hell sent them to Maz in the first place, and blah 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 blah. And these are all very small like things that could be explained away with one line of dialogue, like, oh, she's well known to Leia. Done. But it was kind of like, when my criticism is like, it didn't always feel quite right, but I thought it was really well executed. Any weird little thing about the execution, like when it comes back to me later, I'm like, oh yeah, huh, that detracts a little. But there's a couple of Maz Kanata thing. But that, like, just weird little things where you're just like, huh, why did that need to be there? What purpose did it serve? And did it hurt the movie materially having it there? Not really, but, like, meh.
It's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a really dumb thing. I agree.
And again, I assume it was literally just a matter of actress, obviously, is really sought after. You want to keep her in the Star Wars universe. You want to make sure that people don't assume that she died between movies or anything, since she's 15 kinds of ancient. And so, fine. Like, if the entire point is literally just to keep the character in play, that's fine. Like, you do have to eventually surrender to the fact that these movies are $200 million monoliths, and that there are eventually going to be times when you have to yield to, like, practical concerns. But when you're making kind of an artistic evaluation of it, and you go, huh, that was super weird, what was that all about?
It seemed like somebody just like, let's just animate the shit out of this if you can. Like, I want her standing on a ball, balancing a bunch of plates on her nose, and there's a circus seal and a flaming ring. Just go all in. Like, it just didn't. Why? Like, if anything, that could have at least cut a scene, like, had her, like, looking back in their communicator, like, hey, things are really crazy over here, and she's doing a gunfight with a side character, put another cameo in there, like, double down on that. Don't say, like, hey, there's something really cool happening on the other side of this wall. We're just not going to show you what it is, but trust us, it's really exciting over there.
Yeah, and obviously the other side of that is that it could totally be laying groundwork for future movies, but that comes back to the same thing of, like, oh, do I think Force Awakens is better now that we've seen some of the thematic payoffs from this movie? Well, possibly, but that didn't help me for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And so, you know, any time you say, well, you know, maybe that'll pay off down the line, it's like, that's entirely plausible, but it doesn't really address my initial critique. But yeah, any final thoughts before?
I think I've said all that I needed to say. Overall, just I think the movie's good. I would recommend it to people, especially a Star Wars fan, just with the caution of don't go in with preconceived notions.
Yeah, I hope nobody's listening to it now that hasn't seen it already, because we kind of just trashed it for you. But I don't know. I try to see the movie like I see it. I don't know. Just keep an open mind. If this is the new direction for Star Wars, like, I don't know. I hope that it keeps building on it. And maybe if you didn't like what it did here, you might see the next step, and it might kind of validate it for you in the future. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, again, that all pretty much... For me, I'm a little bit less overall positive on it than you guys, because I've been sitting on stuff, and because I live in this space, and so I spend my entire time like talking back and forth with other geeks. But definitely, it's definitely not a movie I would say not to watch. It's definitely a movie that I thought was really well done, The thing, the kind of cool thing that they did with Laura Dern's ship and the hyperspeed.
That was so cool.
Yeah, that was one of those, even the people in the movie theater who didn't seem to be totally on board for other chunks of the movie. Like, that was one of those, everybody in the movie theater just kind of like got a hush because it was just such a cool moment.
Yeah. Jaw-dropping, like, cool thing. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I always love to, like, because I've had that conversation with people before, like, the, like, okay, why not do that? And I always love it when people, when stories address that kind of stuff narratively. There's actually the second issue of Doomsday Clock, which is the big DC Comics Watchmen crossover, came out today or yesterday, whatever day of the week it is now. And there's a scene in there that I love, and it's mostly just because it's a thing that if you're a comic book person who watched Watchmen or who read Watchmen or maybe watched the movie, you've probably had this conversation. Like, Lex Luthor is talking to Ozymandias and he says, "You dissected a psychic's brain, enlisted the morally bankrupt minds of writers and artists from the likes of Hollywood and comic books, and created an alien invader that murdered 3 million people to unite the world. And you're surprised that humanity hasn't stayed united? If you're the smartest person on your world, I'd hate to meet the dumbest." And that basically, like, not only is that a great kind of takedown line, but also it feels to me like the natural companion to something like, oh, we finally get to see what happens if the desperate suicide bomber just, like, light speeds into some asshole, you know? But, so yeah, definitely see it. Anybody, is there anything else you guys want to plug before we sign off?
I'm not really involved in anything right now, so.
Yeah. Not me neither.
Yeah, I'll be back in 2 weeks with Archie Digest, a Riverdale podcast, which is archiedigestpodcast.com. I do lots of other stuff, but nothing that's really worth plugging at the moment, but I wanted to make sure everybody had a chance to, you know, go around the circle in case there was anything else. So thank you everybody for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. And this, and also the new release wall reaction video, which I'm going to translate to podcast form, will be up on the same day so that you get to hear like 3 hours basically of the Emerald City video crew talking about Star Wars, if that's your jam. So thanks very much. Like, rate, review us on your podcast machine of choice, because that's the only way to grow this beast. And we will be back soon. We got some fun, cool stuff coming up. Welcome to the Emerald.
God damn it. Oh, sorry. That was hilarious.
That's all right.